Welcome back to Off the Hour here on CKUT. That was Off the Hour's Andre Goulet in conversation with Consett Luke Mayor Anthony Housefather. Stay tuned to Off the Hour for more interviews and insight about the secular charter leading up to the conclusion of the public hearings on February 7th and the beginning of a new session at the National Assembly February 11th. In other anti-racist news, Deepan Budlakoti, an Ottawa-born man currently facing deportation to India, a country where he has never lived, was in Montreal this week as part of a national speaking tour. On Wednesday, Deepan and his supporters held a rally outside Liberal leader Justin Trudeau's riding office to denounce the fact that Trudeau has refused to take a position on the case. CKUT's Carla Green was there to bring us this report. We will hear first from Deepan himself and then from one of his supporters, Marie Foster.
Go! No! One! No one is illegal!
No borders! No nation! Stop the deportation!
No borders! No nation!
My name is Deepan Bulakati. I'm a born citizen. I was born on the soil. And I'm facing deportation by the Conservative government.
And so can you talk just briefly about the situation, like the way that this came about?
I got in trouble with the law at age 19. And I was racially profiled when I was inside, and a guard went out of his way to contact CBSA, in my personal opinion. CBSA came and see me stating that I'm not a citizen. If I provided a copy of my birth certificate and a Canadian passport, you would assume that it would have been done right there and then. But it went above and beyond, and now I'm facing deportation to a country where they're not accepting me, have clearly stated that I'm not an Indian national. I've never lived in India, and now I'm classified as stateless.
And you're assuming that the reason that this guard kind of pursued the case, even though you presented a passport and a birth certificate, is because...
My appearance and my skin color.
And do you have any knowledge of other people who have been subjected to a similar thing in prisons?
I'm sure it happens all the time. At Ottawa College and Gen Center, OCDC, in Ottawa, guards go out of their way to contact CBSA. There's no protocol or no policy where individuals get screened when you go inside, but yet guards go out of their way to contact CBSA to check if this person is a citizen or not. I call it a straight racism.
And can you talk, you have a campaign that you've launched around this. Can you talk a bit about the campaign, if it's been successful or not so successful, like what kind of support you've gotten?
My campaign's going well. It's fairly new, but I think it got a lot of support. I've written letters from CCLA, Canadian Liberal Civil Liberties Association in Toronto, BCCLA, British Columbia Civil Liberties Association, Amnesty International, as well as CLC, Canadian Labour Congress. I believe, the biggest union in Canada. It was over 18 million individuals. And they all have written letters on support. All have endorsed my campaign to a certain degree. And now...
Are the endorsements measured in some way? Like, what exactly do they endorse?
They support the campaign, and they support the fact that my international rights are getting violated and my charter rights are getting violated. To this effect, they have written a letter directly to the Minister of Immigration to rectify the situation. These letters are posted on my website at www.justiceforDepan.org.
And we just today, actually, we went to Trudeau's office, Justin Trudeau, to try to talk to him about the situation. And so what has been Trudeau's position in the past, and how has that changed in the current situation?
In the past, he was supportive, said that if I needed any help, contact his office, and he would help. And now...
Did he ever write, like, a letter, or was it just...
It was a written letter.
Do you have a copy of it?
Solidarity Across Borders has a copy of it. I don't think I have a copy of it right now, but you guys can get it from... You can ask...
In the past, he said that he was supportive, and then...
Now his position is that he's neutral. He doesn't want to take no position. So he's basically feeding to the Conservative policy. He's allowing the Conservative government to change the immigration policy to a certain degree and doesn't want to step up and show his voice. As a Liberal leader, if he can go in the position saying that he will support Kadar on international violations, why is he not able to support my campaign, in my case?
You said that the Indian High Commissioner. High Commissioner has written a letter stating that your parents didn't work.
That's correct.
Right. Do you have a copy of that letter?
That letter's been released to the media. I'm sure it's somewhere on the, I think like 30 even. I did a press conference at the House of Commons in Parliament, and I've released that letter to everyone. The letter is released, and it clearly states that my parents did not work for the High Commission in any capacity whatsoever since June 12, 1989.
And the Conservative, or the government in general, hasn't responded.
No position whatsoever.
And one final question. You only found out that the Indian government had said that you had no status there and that they weren't going to accept you through an access to information request. Is that right?
That's correct.
Could you talk a little bit about that situation?
Yeah. CBSA knew that, known 5 months prior to me being released, that India had already given their position, but they still held me on immigration hold. I did an extra 6 months in jail on immigration hold. It's ridiculous. Extra 6 months in jail. Now, once that was completed, I did file an access information request form. Mm-hmm. Got the proof that clearly stating the fact that they known this 5 months prior, but why did they hold me?
No ada double pen, justice for the pen.
My name's Mary Foster. I work with Solidarity Cross Borders.
And so could you just talk briefly about we were just at Justin Trudeau's office. So what just happened?
We just went to, after 4 or 5 months of communicating back and forth by email and phone and receiving a response that Justin Trudeau would not intervene on the file, we decided to go and try to set up a meeting with Justin Trudeau and deliver a letter. So we went into the office, we delivered the letter, and we asked for some kind of guarantee or commitment that there would be a meeting. And we were told to leave. And the person we spoke to was the office manager, who claimed to have no possibility of contacting anyone without losing his job, which is quite curious. And he absolutely refused to even so much as say that he'd get back to us at the end of the month. So we feel really like... the level of accountability to people, obviously shown by that office, is pretty much nil. They just didn't care how they treated us. We felt like we were completely silenced and thrown out without even having the courtesy to promise any kind of follow-up or care in any way practically about the situation.
And this experience seems to be more or less typical of the response of that DPEN has gotten. Do you think, is it typical of the response that you generally get in other cases of either double punishment or deportation in general?
Yeah, it just feels as though members of parliament feel less and less accountable or interested in what their population has to say. Every once in a while you strike the rare one who does seem to have gone into that situation with an inkling of being accountable to people around them, but in Trudeau's case, clearly he couldn't care less what is going on with immigration law and what is happening to immigrants in the country. He refusing to take a position on a very high profile, very clear cut case like this, I think shows how little concern and disdain he has for people who are living what DPEN's living. And I think that's carried almost across the board. It doesn't matter what political party people are from. The behavior of those members of parliament and of people that, like the guy we just met in the office, is what's allowing these this trend to continue towards excluding more and more people from certain privileges attached to citizenship in this country. So it's creating a larger and larger gulf between people who are stable and have their citizenship, who are white and in that central privileged class, and then people who are struggling to have those privileges and are placed in varying degrees of vulnerability according to their status, according to their color and
Something that I thought was really interesting about it is, as we were going up in the elevator, there's actually a man who looked like he was probably a security guard who said, like, I don't want any disorder. I hope you're not going to make disorder. And it was kind of this, for me, it was this interesting thing where it's like, what this political office is supposed to be about isn't making disorder, isn't kind of like rabble-rousing, quote-unquote. It's that everything kind of goes orderly. But the problem is that the order, the way that things function currently, is very obviously against people who don't benefit from the current system. I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on that. If you don't, it's okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The fact that we arrived at the door and it was locked. I mean, you can't get into the office to address people who are making decisions for the rest of us without their, first of all, approving us, deciding we're going to be orderly and follow the order. He kept repeating that there's a process for doing things, even though we explained we'd gone through that process for doing things and it hadn't gotten us anywhere, which is why we were trying to disrupt that order and bring a message to people who are taking decisions for us right now. And I think that the fact that they're establishing those rules is the first thing we have to get across and the first thing we have to break down and point out that they are actually not responsible to us. They're maintaining an order in order to...
Maintaining neutrality, too.
Maintaining neutrality, so-called neutrality, which is not a neutrality at all, because by failing to speak on Deepan's case, they are allowing... And they're participating implicitly in excluding him from society and keeping him in this situation of being denied rights many other people in this country are, and many people are supposed to be entitled to. But this by disrupting that order, I think, is where we can begin to, and calling these people to account and saying, who exactly are you speaking for? Because you're not speaking for us, because we're here. As within the order you set up, we're here to say, this is what we want you to say, you're ignoring us, so who are you speaking for? So I think disrupting that order is the first way we're going to start making these changes and challenging these calcified privileges that are hiding behind these rules and these orders and these procedures for doing things and these, you know, that you're being unpeaceful right now. That kind of comment is another way of silencing and preventing people from challenging those privileges.
And then one final question about statelessness. So Deepan right now technically is stateless because he's not recognized by the Indian government and the Canadian government is denying his citizenship. Could you just talk a bit about what exactly it means to be stateless and if there are other people that you know of who are also living with this reality of being stateless?
It's interesting because states have taken all the space of privilege. So they... are the central, they're not the only, but they're the main distributors of privilege. They've assumed that control over who gets privilege and who is excluded from privilege. So when states refuse to put you, it's like a fiefdom. It's like having, you're a serf and you have the state as your master. So when no master will take you, you're essentially an outcast. You don't have any of those privileges except in this marginal space outside any state controlled society. So that's the reality that Deepan's living right now. He's living in a situation where he doesn't have what Canada offers as privileges. So he doesn't have the ability to cross borders. He doesn't have the ability to access free health care. He doesn't have the ability to get education. He doesn't have the ability to work without the explicit permission and applying for the permission by the state. He doesn't have all of those privileges that people who are accorded Canadian citizenship are given. And there are other people in that situation. I'm not aware of anyone else in Canada at this point, but the classic example is Palestine. In Canada, if you're living as a stateless Palestinian and you don't have another status in Canada, so if you're not a refugee claimant or something, you become deportable, and then Canada can either leave you in a situation where you're under a deportation order to a place that refuses to recognize you, so you can live in exactly the situation that Deepan's living in, which is a kind of an indefinite detention, because in addition to all the fact that he has lack of privileges, Canada places people who are in deportation track, like Deepan, or stateless people, but anyone without status in Canada can be placed under Canadian law under in detention. So you can have detentions of 8, 13 years. It's indefinite under Canadian law, which is a huge problem. So you can be either in a detention center or, like Deepan, you can be outside a detention center but with conditions placed on you. So you have to report once a week, or you have to stay. In his case, he has to live with a person who is a surety. And there's a number of conditions that he has to follow that don't apply to the rest of us. So in addition to being excluded from the privileges of Canadianship, he's being placed under a regime of control by Canada.